now.
Episode of Pandorica Opens, our fortnightly show regards most and all things Doctor Who. With me as always is Raisa, and we're going to be talking about the previous two episodes, the Zygon Invasion and the Zygon Inversion. And, you know, it's our aim to take you through the good, the bad and the ugly. So Raisa, first off, what were your thoughts?
We need to deal with this two-parter on two levels. At the level of it being a direct sequel to The Day of the Doctor, I thought it was extremely effective in terms of what it echoed and how it ended. But as episodes in themselves, I felt like they were both 40-minute wind-ups to 5-minute pitches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt that, and I said this in my review as well, I think they kind of wrapped things up too tidily. It was too neat.
Yeah.
The thing that I did like, I liked Zygon Clara. In fact, I liked Zygon Clara better than normal Clara.
I did too, actually.
But I had, you know, while I was watching the second episode, I was kind of like thinking, has Clara been a Zygon all along since the Day of the Doctor? Could that be possible? Could that be why her storyline hasn't been touched on that much? And then I thought, nah, I'm kidding myself.
All we know about her storyline, that's the other thing that bugs. She's leaving, and they're foreshadowing the fact that she's leaving with this huge anvil of foreshadowing, but we don't have any sense of what her arc is. The only reason we know that there's going to be an arc is because Capaldi and others have said that it's going to be a drawn-out thing that takes episodes instead of a sudden resolution.
Uh-huh. And, you know, by what I've been hearing, it could well be resolved in the next episode, if not the one after.
Mm. Okay.
Which doesn't give them long, which seems to hint that she's going to be gone by episode 10.
Yeah, all I know is that whatever it is, it's going to be permanent, because Moffat is saying she's not coming back. It's not going to be one of those the doors left open for her to come back things. Then we thought that about Rose too, so who knows.
Yeah, but, you know, let's look at who was showrunner at that time. Russell T. Davis was showrunner at that time. And
That's true. And
I personally think that, you know, he was even more of a fanboy in many ways than Moffat.
Which is scary.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is scary. I mean, it was Russell T. Davis's not-so-bright idea to have the Cybermen going up against the Daleks, which is I still hate that to this day.
Oh, God, yeah.
But in terms of the Zygons, I just think, like I was saying before we went to air, I think that this two-episode arc that we just seen, it's kind of like rendered the Zygons pretty much mute as a credible threat in future episodes.
Yeah, I mean, because the entire time I was wondering, what is Bonnie even rebelling from? Her entire species is designed malevolently or otherwise to camouflage itself. So suddenly she doesn't want to be her species. She doesn't want to be a creature that camouflages herself. What was she actually angry about? I never understood this.
I didn't. And why all of a sudden has she decided she wants to be Osgood?
Well, that made sense to the extent that the previous Osgood was murdered by Misty, so she wanted to take her place to maintain the truth that she now believed in. But that whole motivation, as logical as it was on paper, was rushed. So
But a good thing about that is we still don't know which Osgood is which. You know,
no, we don't.
There could be one human and one Zygon still, or they could be two Zygons.
Yeah, we don't know.
You know, it's kind of like one of those things. I mean, I actually like that mystery sort of thing, but I just know that it's going to be driving us nuts for the next two seasons if they stretch it out that long.
Yeah.
And I hope they do keep Osgood around because she's a really cute character. Little bit of a pitch here for anyone that's listening out there. If you're a fan of Doctor Who, get the unit. What's it called now? The unit. It's from Big Finish.
Unit Extinction.
Episode box set from Big Finish. It's cracking. Listen. And you get a lot more Osgood and a lot more Kate Stewart in it, and they're far more fleshed out than the RMTV series. In fact, Racer and I were saying before we went to air, we actually preferred it to the Zygon two-parter.
Yes.
And, you know, that's kind of sacrilege because there was no Doctor in it.
Yeah. But putting the absence of the Doctor aside, structurally it felt more like classic Doctor Who in terms of the level of character, because it used to be in the classic series that you had room for character beats. You had room for the characters to actually sigh and take note of their surroundings. And my most famous one that I'm particularly fond of is there's a point where the third Doctor and Joe are held prisoner in Atlantis, in one of the four Atlantises. The four different versions of it. They're held prisoner in Atlantis. They're chained to the wall, and this gives Pertwee this brilliant space in which to, as the third Doctor, wax eloquent about existential Gallifreyan daisies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome. And the new series just doesn't allow for those kind of beats. They don't have time. I mean, even if Moffat or someone else wanted to write that stuff, they just can't. The closest you got was the third season finale, where the Doctor and everyone are on the run from the Master, and the Doctor talks about Gallifrey to Jack and Martha, and we get that whole exchange. That's the closest we've gotten to classic series characters.
Yeah, I don't exactly agree with that, because I think we got close to it in the second part of the Zygon thing. The Zygon inversion, you got a cracking anti-war speech by Peter Cowdy,
yeah,
which has to be his moment of his entire run. You know, he was just fantastic. He basically chewed up all the scenery, and you know, he could have ate Zygons for breakfast with that speech. He was sort of like, it was awesome.
Yes, the caveat to that is I don't regard that in the same category as existential Gallifreyan deities, because that is tied to the PTSD and the modern mythos. So of course Moffat would make room for that.
It's still a character beat. It's still a really character beat. But you know,
that's true.
And in that regard, it's like it's right up there with classic series.
It is. The issue structurally, though, is that the classic series integrated the character beats organically, whereas it felt like this two-parter was just kind of leading up to that speech. Like, that speech was the first thing he wrote, and he reverse-engineered the two-parter going backwards to justify that speech. Which is not a bad thing, because that speech is awesome. I'm not saying it's not awesome. It's just that it felt like, and now we shall have a moment.
I get where you're going. He felt like it was engineered, yeah. But let me ask you this. Can you see either Christopher Eccleston, David Tennant, or Matt Smith doing that speech and pulling it off as well as Capaldi did?
No. By the same token, Capaldi could not have done it without the narrative groundwork of the previous doctors. This is an instance of backstory meshing with performance. But Capaldi is the one that needed to be the one to say it, and he was. I mean, yeah, that was a BAFTA level thing there. It really was.
Yeah, it's just too bad that the story wasn't really strong enough to support it. You know,
no.
As in, what I mean by that is that speech really, by Capaldi, is like the standout moment of the two episodes. The two episodes in and of themselves, they had a lot of nice little character beats, but they weren't really all that strong.
No. What's interesting, though, and going back to UNIT and the inclusion now of Kate Lethbridge-Stewart, is you really got the sense, and partly this is because she's played by Gemma Redgrave, that Kate was truly affected by the speech, and not just because she was the head of UNIT, or that even because her father was the head of UNIT, but because this man who was bearing his soul all of a sudden, is basically family to her.
Mm-hmm.
And you really got the sense that link was there, and that she was watching her beloved eccentric uncle have a breakdown for 5 minutes. And she understood that he needed her to function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I just love that. I love that entire moment. I mean, it's, you know, as I say, it's just a proper shame that the episodes leading up to it were so kind of like weak.
Yeah.
You know,
it's what
we were saying before about the UNIT extinction. You know, that shows you what can be done with UNIT, and you know they can like. With the modern series has time and time again missed an opportunity to do something good with UNIT, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not as much a part. It doesn't feel as much a part of the modern Who universe as it did in the old in the classic series.
No, it doesn't. They're getting better at that than they were. But they're not there yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're definitely not there yet. And, you know, I think the fact that they've created characters like Kate Stewart and Osgood is an indication that they're trying to get there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also think that people should listen to UNIT Extinction.
Yeah.
So to get an idea of what we're talking about here. Because it was just that in itself was awesome. In terms of the audience appreciation for this and ratings for this last two episodes, apparently got an official rating for Saigon Invasion. It had an official consolidated rating of 5.76 million viewers, which is better than the 3.5 million that the show got in overnight. So, you know, but as we constantly say, ignore the overnight.
Yeah.
Because they're literally meaningless at the moment, and you know, it's sort of like Matt Gaetz said it in an interview recently. He said that, you know, the fact of the matter is, in about sort of like 10 years' time, people will have forgotten about Bake Off, which is sort of like the highest rated show of the early part of autumn going into winter. And but in 10 years' time, they'll still be watching Doctor Who, and he's right.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. The Zygon inversion, however, it got an audience appreciation or AI score of 84, which is actually pretty damn high. The highest score for the weekend was the Royal British Legion Festival of Remembrance, which scored 90. Well, it didn't score 90 for me because I didn't bother watching it. I find that sort of thing quite tedious and boring, you know. Mm. I don't know, it's paying respects to the Forgeng and stuff like that, You know, I'd rather pay my respects privately, you know, and think about them in my own way, as opposed to having 3 hours of Royal British Legion shoved down my throat, sort of thing. But that's just me being very, very political. We've got Australian overnight ratings for the Zygon inversion and final ratings for The Woman Who Lived. In Australia, it debuted in Australia averaging 466,000 viewers in the 5 major capital cities. It was the highest rating ABC drama of the day and the 16th highest rating programme of the day overall. These ratings do not include iView, regional or time shifted viewers. Meanwhile, including time shifted viewers, The Woman Who Lived averaged 647,000 consolidated viewers in the 5 major capital cities. With 151,000 extra viewers, it was the third highest time shifted programme of the day. So, you know, done good in Australia. And the press reaction, The Guardian said they felt the episode finally cemented Capaldi as the Doctor as he delivered the passionate speech. So they're pretty much agreeing with what we said. In fact, everyone's agreeing with what we said about Capaldi there. Because it was all across the media at weekend that it was really Capaldi's moment, you know, standout moment as the Doctor. And the Zygon inversion overnight viewing figures here in the UK were 4.13 million viewers.
Cool.
So it's actually gone up. Top once more was the BBC celebrity dance show Strictly Come Dancing, which is on the same channel as Doctor Who. It's on right before Doctor Who, actually. And that had 9.17 million viewers watching. And The X Factor on ITV, which was on at the same time as Doctor Who. And it was second with 6.42 million viewers. That's actually bad for The X Factor. It used to get around an average of 12 million.
Wow. Okay.
So you know, the fact that, you know, it's... but there we go. And...
Wow.
I don't know. I'm going to ask you, have you ever heard of a Doctor Who one-off called Downtime?
No, I never have. I looked for it. It's not available in the U.S. and it's Region 2, unfortunately. So until it's either Region 3 or Region 1, I'm not going to bother with it.
It introduces Kate Stewart.
Oh, wow, cool.
You know, it's not Gemma Redgrave that plays her, but it's got kind of Kate Stewart's in it, and she's not a part of UNIT in this. She's sort of like just a Brigadier's daughter in this, but she's kind of like introduced in it with her son, sort of thing. But the big part of it was, it's sort of like it had, you know, it had people from the classic series that, you know, that have passed. You know, you had Sarah Jane Smith, you had the Brigadier.
And
they have big parts in it. And you also had I can't remember her surname's Watling. She played Victoria in the
Deborah Watling. Her father Jack plays Professor Travers.
Professor Travers, like he did in the original. Yeah, and it's all I could. And it centres around the Great Intelligence. It was actually really, really well done.
Cool.
The running time's an hour and ten minutes, I think, but I thought I'd mention it because of that, and also, you know, because got a feeling that it'd be of interest to new, you know, to modern fans because of a Kate Stewart connection. But having watched it, I think your modern fans that have had no exposure to the classic series will probably struggle with it. Because of the pacing, it's not as fast.
No.
Fast paced. But, you know, thought that'd be interesting to you. I'm hoping you can get hold of it somehow.
Eventually, if I can find it in a format that I can actually play.
Well, you know, hopefully they'll release it in the US market, or, you know, it'll come out via a convention or something. Do you go to conventions?
No, it's difficult to travel, so I don't go to a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And but I get all the news from the conventions online one way or the other, so I don't feel like I miss much.
Okay, cool. And another bit of Doctor Who news, just as we're closing out the programme here, because I don't think we've got anything else to chat about the Zygon inversion or invasion. I think we've said everything we want to say on that, haven't we?
Yes, we have, I think.
Okay, well, another bit of Doctor Who news is Titan Comics, alongside with BBC Worldwide, they're doing a fourth Doctor miniseries next year featuring Tom
Yay!
Baker's Doctor. And it's gonna be the fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane Smith.
Yay!
Yeah, so I thought I'd mention that. I'm probably gonna subscribe to that on Comixology or something, but you know, because it does look like a fun, you know, a fun story, especially having the fourth Doctor back, who's my favourite.
Yes, my Doctor too.
Yeah. From the classic series is my favourite. Capaldi is my favourite from the modern.
Yes, Capaldi is my modern Doctor. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Baker is my classic Doctor. I think I'm responding to Capaldi because of Baker.
But so. Mm-hmm. Well, basically, here's the press release. I'll just, you know, go through it real quickly for you. This was released today. Titan Comics and BBC Worldwide are pleased to announce a brand new miniseries starring the fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane Smith, as played by Tom Baker and the late Elizabeth Sneyden. This series expands Titan Comics' hugely popular and critically acclaimed Doctor Who comics line, which already includes adventures from the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th and 12th Doctors. Entitled Gaze of a Medusa, the five-part series will hit stores in March 2016 and will be penned by Gordon Rennie, who's responsible for, you know, such comics as Missionary Man and Judge Dredd, and Emma Beebe, who's responsible for Witch Hunter and Judge Dredd, with art by Brian Williamson, who's done artwork on The 12th Doctor, Spider-Man and X-Men. The all-new adventure is set in Victorian England, where a mysterious woman commands a hidden army in a house of a blind Cyclops stalk the streets, and something alien and terrible screams from prehistory with a hunger that cannot be satisfied. Issue 1 will come with 6 covers to collect, a painted cover by fan favourite artist Alice Etz Zhang, a photo variant art cover by artist Brian Williamson, Jay Gunn and Matt Baxter, and a blank sketch variant. Doctor Who The Fourth Doctor Issue 1 debuts in comic stores and on digital devices from March 2016.
Cool. At the rate they're going, Titan is going to do for Doctor Who in comics what Big Finish has been doing in audio.
Yeah, well, you know, Titan have done a really good job, but IDW did a great job with the Doctor Who comics before them.
Oh, that's right. It's been two separate companies. I forgot that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just that I think what happened when IDW got it, Titan Comics didn't exist because Titan back then were just sort of like magazines, and they were also clearing house for sort of like the Marvel and DC stuff. As in, you know, Marvel, and you know, so I think it's mostly DC, would release, trade paperbacks through Titan. And they released all the Mark Miller stuff. But then, you know, a couple of years back, it's probably 2010, they started forming a comics company sort of thing. And they've been doing original stuff as well as sort of like re-releasing older stuff. With updated print and printing technologies and stuff like that, and they got the Doctor Who in 2012, I think it was, when IDW stopped doing it.
Cool.
But IDW also did a great job of it. You know, IDW did a run of the 12 Doctors, of the 11 Doctors for the 50th anniversary.
cool.
Which is pretty good. So, you know, I like what Titan's doing, but I don't like to suddenly sort of like, you know, rah-rah in Titan and kind of like disregarding what IDW did, because, you know, they did great work.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
With what they had, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And they do good work with Star Trek as well.
Cool.
So, anything else?
No, I think I covered everything I had to cover.
Yeah, I think I have too. So this is a Racer and Ian now signing off. We're getting back in our time machine, and we'll be back again in 2 weeks' time with our reviews of the next two episodes. At this moment, we're not sure if they're a two-parter or two separate stories. But we'll talk about them in 2 weeks' time. So bye for now.